Thank you very much. A great pleasure to be here. I heard a lot about Perimeter Institute. Finally, I have a chance to visit. That's great. I go to Toronto very often, CETA, you know, every 5 years I tend to go visit. But it's... Okay, so I want to talk about the formation of merging black hole binaries. So let me, I have 10 slides that sort of, I think, most people are probably very familiar with, even for those who don't work on gravitational wave, I think. So I want to go through that very quickly so that we're on the same page. So we're on the new era of gravitational wave astronomy, of course, and these are the current LIGO detections, like O3, 90 merger events. Most of them are black hole mergers, but also two neutron star mergers, and then three neutron star black hole mergers, right? And these are black hole mergers, gravitational wave produced. Neutron star merger give you a mess producing all the fluid dynamics. And black hole neutron star mergers. And of course, gravitational waves are warpage of space-time propagating right from the source to us. And this, of course, is how LIGO detected gravitational waves. And here, again, are the 90 events, right? Now, for each event, right, you can get a measurement on the masses of the individual components, M1, M2. And in many situations, you can also get a good constraint or measurement on this chi effective, right? The chi effective, it's the spin parameter. So chi one, it's the curl parameter of each black hole, has a direction, right? So this chi effective, it's the mass weighted spin of the two black holes projected along the orbital angular momentum axis. This is a quantity that directly can affect the waveform, the chirp, right? Therefore, this quantity can be measured or constrained. So mainly for each of these sources, you have a good measurement of M1, M2, and some constraint on this chi effective, okay? Now, what can we do with the gravitational waves detections in the coming years, right? Several things. First, of course, test GR in the nonlinear regimes, and this, of course, so far what I heard is GR works perfectly, but this, of course, is a very important question. A lot of experts working on this problem in the coming years, hopefully there are some try to test GR. This is, of course, important program, long-term program. And you can study nuclear matter, right? When you have a merger, you basically, you know, the merger event, even before merger, there are tidal interactions, right? And that can affect the waveform. And after merger, this, you have all this moving around, there are certain frequencies that depends on the equation of state. So you can learn about the equation of state of nuclear matter. Right, and you can also study nuclear synthesis, because when you have neutron star merger, you release some of the material which are neutron rich, and this neutron rich material can be synthesized into R process element like gold, and this R process element can decay and therefore power some electromagnetic radiation. Right, so there are a lot of so this is another thing you can do, nuclear synthesis, right, and finally you can do astrophysics. Here, what I mean here is that you're going to, in the case of black hole binary merger, you're going to have many, many events. So far, it's 90 events, but in the coming years, there'll be going to be thousands of events, right? The question is, what are you going to learn about this, what kind of thing you can learn about this merger, right? And so, where these black holes come from, right? How do you form this black hole, right? Black hole binary, merging black hole binary. So here it's the first thing to recognize is, of course, when you have a binary, two binary binary, they always radiate a gravitational wave. But of course, if the separation is too large, they don't merge within Hubble time. So if you want to merge the two black holes, the separation must be close enough, right? The number to remember, so here's this formula, basically means, here it's basically 30 plus 30 solar mass black hole, so total mass 60, reduced mass 25, right? The merger time as a function of the semi-major axis and eccentricity. So here is basically some people call it final AU problem, right? If you want these two black holes to merge, right, even though they're in the binary, you want to make sure the binary is sufficiently close, right? And so that gravitational wave can become important, can merge these two things within a Hubble time. So in the galaxy, in the universe, there are a lot of binaries. Most of them, they are very far away from each other, right? So the game, the astrophysics problem, the challenge is to try to figure out how can you get this binary, you know, from large separation too small separation, or less than AU or so, so that gravitational wave can take over, so that they can merge. Okay, so that's the game in town. So what are the possibilities of merger formation of binary, forming these binaries? Roughly speaking, there are two possibilities. The first one is isolated binary evolution, and the second one is the dynamical formation, which includes several different flavors, all right? Star clusters, triple and multiples, AGN disks. So I'm going to talk about these channels, these possibilities, right? But before I talk about them, let's just remind ourselves some of the basic things that what are the things we can use to constrain these different possibilities, different formation channels, right? How do you distinguish these different formation channels? First, of course, rates, right? And this you can imagine, you know, each of these scenarios we're going to talk about will give you some rates, how often this happens. LIGO is going to already give you some constraint on the rates, you know, how often this happens, right? And each of the formation channel will have some rates, so you want to, of course, to be relevant, you want to have reasonable rates, right? So this you can imagine, for many of these scenarios I will talk about, it's all very uncertain, right? Because, you know, sometimes the physics is very clean, but they're just some astronomy. A lot of times you don't know this, you know, the environmental uncertainties, right? You don't really know. So I'm not going to say anything about the rates, because essentially all the formation channel people have studied, the rate, if you ask them, you know, from first principle, try to predict the rates, it's usually very uncertain by at least two order magnitude. Okay, so that's certainly it's a constraint. And masses and mass ratio of the two binary component that's merging, that's also important, right? So I'll talk about it. And the residual eccentricity. So, you know, as you know, as the binary decays, you have two black holes orbiting each other, the orbit gradually decays, right? If the binary initially has eccentricity, the eccentricity will gradually decay also. Gravitational wave not only shrink the orbit, but also circularize the orbit. So for most of the cases, you'll find that when the binary enters the LIGO band, which is almost before merger, you know, LIGO only detects things when the thing, you know, almost come into contact, more or less, right? In most cases, it will be circular. The orbit will be orbit circularized. But there will be some possibilities. In some cases, you form this binary, they're very, very eccentric. They're almost close to merging, and then when they enter the LIGO band, they still have some finite eccentricity. That will be important, of course, right? And then the spin orbit misalignment. So this here, what I'm talking about is the spin of the individual black hole and the orbital angular axis of the binary. So this angle, right? Why this matters? Because I told you about this chi effective a bit earlier. It's chi effective. This quantity, where is it? This quantity, chi effective, right? The chi effective is mass weighted spin projected along the orbital angular axis. So it depends on that angle between chi 1 and chi 2 relative L hat. So that angle will affect the chi effective. So that we'll talk about the chi effective. Okay? And finally, you know, black hole merger, for example, certainly, you know, in vacuum, there are going to be most likely no electromagnetic counterpart, unless you try to invoke charge, right? Right? But there will be situation, maybe you have a merger in the gaseous, you know, plasma environment that maybe produce some electromagnetic counterpart. So that will be important. Okay? So that's the kind of thing to keep in mind that we can potentially hope to constrain the different formation channels. So now let me discuss some of these the formation channels, right? Starting with isolated binary evolution. And this probably is the standard model of forming binary black holes. It's certainly not as good as the particle physics standard model at all, basically. It's just a standard scenario. We don't know whether it works, right? So in this picture, you start with two massive binary main sequence stars, right? Far away from each other, and this is very common, you know, the 80% of the 70-80% of the stars, massive stars in the galaxy, in the universe, they are likely in binaries. So this is pretty standard thing, right? They orbit each other. Binaries, massive stars, very common. And then the star, of course, the binary star evolve, right? The star evolve, they become bigger, right? So in that case, the more massive one become bigger, and then starting mass transfer, and then you have a supernova explosion making the first black hole, and then you have the second star evolve, become bigger, engulfing this that I'm talking about here, right? This guy, you already have a black hole, this guy expanding, engulfing this binary. So you get this so-called common envelope phase where you have a little black already first formed black hole and then core of the other massive star both engulfed in this common envelope, right? And during this is the key step in this process for shrinking the orbit, because initially they are far away from each other. You can see the separation here is like, it's like 20 AU. Right, 20 AU is far, you cannot merge, you need AU, sub-AU to merge, right? It is during this step that the orbit can shrink, right? The orbit between this black hole and this thing can shrink because you have this thing moving around in the gaseous envelope. There's a friction, dynamical friction, right? Now you need to shrink them, and you cannot shrink, that seems to be very natural, but the trick here, the difficulty here is that you don't want to completely shrink this thing, because if you shrink them, they will merge already. This black hole and this core, this is a helium star, helium core. If they completely merge during this thing, you don't have black hole binary, right? So the trick here is that you want to shrink the orbit to some degree, at the same time, make sure the envelope get ejected. So that's a little bit of tuning. You need so that part is not clear whether they'll happen. Okay, so this is the main, it's a classical physics, but it's uncertain physics. It's hard to simulate. So that is why this scenario certainly happened, but we don't know whether this will give you the right, black hole and helium star. And the helium star, if this is successful, shrink the orbit, but not over shrinking the thing. Then you get this black hole and helium star, and then they can eventually get the thing. So that's right. So this is the standard model, but we don't know whether it works. Maybe may work, but we don't know, right? So regardless of this uncertainty, most likely, this will produce circular binary merger, right? Because this thing is embedded envelope, so this whole thing will be circular, more or less, right? And when they enter the black hole band, even more circular. And most likely, it will produce aligned spin orbit angle, right? Because you have this thing, everything in the same direction. Spin, they have accretion, for example. Okay?
Ask about that, actually. So these black holes are formed via supernovae, and those
right.
supernovae have kicks usually.
Right.
And so then, wouldn't these kicks break?
Yes. Some of these things, first of the kick may not be so big in the case when you're forming black hole. For neutron star, if you form neutron star, there are certain large kick. For black hole, the kick probably is small.
Oh.
Right? Because you have, most of the mass is, given momentum, divide the mass, the velocity is small. Given the amount of momentum, asymmetric kick, the remnant mass is so bigger, so you get the kick is probably small, okay? But it's true, for example, this stage, let's say here, if you have a supernova, yes, some of them may become unbound. That absolutely, certainly true, it's possible, but it's unlikely because the kick is already tightly bound, the orbit is already shrunk, and then you have an explosion here. Yeah, there's certainly this possibility. When people do this population synthesis, they have to go through all these things. Take into account all these possibilities, right? Okay, but this one they always have to parameterize. Basically starting here and let it shrink to some degree and then stop, and the envelope is gone. They just some knob. They just right, and that knob usually is uncertain. Okay, okay. So that's the standard model. The other variant of this thing, let me skip. It's also binary, isolated binary evolution, but it's slightly different. Basically, just imagine you have two massive stars. They're already very close to each other. When they're very close, they're rotating very fast, and therefore these stars always stay on the main sequence. They never become red giants, so they never have this developing this core envelope structure. So in that case, because they're already very close, so they can form this
The common envelope picture was there for a long time.
Yes.
The second one, the chemically homogeneous one, was strongly motivated by the first gravitational wave detection.
Yes.
I've kind of understood that in this isolated formation mechanism,
yes,
the only two options?
Like, these are the two options.
Yeah. Not exist until the gravitational waves were discovered.
Where the motivation for this this thing? There are, you know, I'm not an expert, but Norbert Langer certainly has talked about these kind of things, this possibility of this idea has been around for a long time.
Okay.
The fact that when you have a close binary, they are very close, the orbit is synchronized, spin orbit is synchronized, therefore the star is rotating very fast. And the notion is that when the star rotates very fast, there are a lot of hydrodynamical instability happening in the star, therefore they produce, you know, everything's mixed. So they don't develop this end structure. So there are, I think even before LIGO event, people talked about this possibility, and Langer certainly. They claim they can explain some abundance features, but I can't give you a sort of with anything with great confidence. I think this is a, yeah. Okay, so these are the isolated binary evolution channel, right? They produce circular orbit, mostly aligned thing. So now let me talk about dynamical formation channels. There are several different flavors. The first flavor involves dense star clusters, and basically you imagine you have a dense star, like globular clusters, basically family of stars, a lot of stars together, right? And or nuclear star clusters, you know, you have a lot of stars in orbiting around the center of the galaxy, right? And in this nuclear star cluster, or this cluster, there could be already some binaries already, binary black holes already. That's pretty common, that you think, right? Binary star in the cluster, that's so common, then say, why not binary black holes already, right? So you have binary black holes already in the cluster, they are far away from each other, they cannot merge by themselves, but you have this cluster environment, that means you could have this close encounters between binaries and other things, other star, right? So in this case, in all these dense cluster scenarios, the key physical process is always binary single scattering. So you have this binary, right, separation too far away from each other, cannot merge, but you have another guy coming in close to it. The three of them, you know, dance around each other, right? And then after a while, one of them will be ejected. And that ejected thing will be taking away a lot of energy. Suppose taking that's some probability that can take possibility taking away energy. And therefore, the remaining binary will be more bound. Right, therefore the orbit shrinks, right? And so that's all this process. People have been studying this for many years, many decades, right? So this physics is very, very clean, of course, right? But of course, here the uncertainty, it's the sort of environmental uncertainty, right? Basically, do we have enough black hole in the cluster? You know, when you have a black hole forming in the cluster, you know, like globular cluster, the gravitational potential well in the globular cluster is very weak. So when you have a kick, the black hole may be kicked away, so it may not be staying in the cluster. So you don't know how many black holes are there in the cluster, right? So you may need the global cluster may not work. Maybe you need a nuclear star cluster where you rely on this supermassive black hole to help maintaining everything, you know, so that, right? So there's environmental uncertainties, right? So many people have studied this problem, this scenario. So the most likely, the answer is that the general conclusion is that in this scenario, you tend to produce circular orbit when the binary enter the LIGO band, simply because orbit, you know, is pretty big. So even though after the scattering process is eccentric, but then they will shrink, and then they will be circularized. And then in this scenario, you are going to produce, you expect to have random spin orbit orientation, simply because the scattering process is, you know, chaotic. Any kind of initial order will be scrambled by the scattering process, right? So that's the expectation. Okay, so that's the first flavor. The second flavor of dynamical channel is what I called tertiary induced merger. So it also involves three or four bodies, but except here, the interaction is more gentle, right? Instead of this messy, you know, scattering process, it's gentle things. So here, the picture here is that you have a binary, right? They are, you know, separate two binary black holes. They are far away from each other, don't merge by themselves. But you have a distant third body, a triple, or tertiary, you know, or quadruple system, you know, far away. That third body could be far away. So they don't come in, you know, strongly interacting with this binary. Instead, even though they're far away, if you have a lot of time, over time, this third body can gradually change the shape of the orbit so that they can make the binary merge, okay, coming close to each other and then can make the merge. So it's a gentle perturbation, merger induced by gentle perturbation from the tertiary companions, okay? So this stellar triple, this kind of scenario could happen in the stellar field because I told you that binaries are very common. Triple is also quite common, you know, 30% of massive stars are in triples, right? Yeah, it's not that unusual, right? Massive stars, they come in pairs and triples. And so in that case, the tertiary body could be another star. Right? You have a binary black hole here, another star, another black hole, some stellar mass black hole. And this kind of scenario could also happen in the nuclear star cluster where you have a binary, you know, orbiting around the supermassive black hole. So in that case, the tertiary would be a supermassive black hole. Right? This could happen. Okay. Now, I want to spend a little bit time on this because this is something we have been working on over the last few years. And the idea is not new. Actually, this scenario people have studied over the years and in different contexts. This idea, right? But I want to give you sort of a summary on what the kind of thing what we have done. What are the general, so here, actually, before I talk about detail, here are the sort of general so-called predictions. So, and this kind of prediction is not like particle physics predictions, right? It's, you know, when you have astronomy, there's always, you know, it's possible, you have the likely, and you have to make certain assumptions. So these are generic, some general predictions, right? Implications. Generally, you can produce some residual eccentricity. So basically, because this kind of scenario, the black hole, that can merge, they will have large eccentricity. And then when they merge, they can still have some finite small eccentricity. And they can produce broad spin orbit angle with slight peak around 90 degrees. And then if this scenario is happening in the galactic field, meaning the tertiary, it's another stellar mass object, then everything being equal, the merger tend to prefer unequal mass merger, namely the two components tend to be unequal mass, asymmetric mass, right? And this may, as we're going to talk about, they may actually be constrained by LIGO data already. And then in the nuclear star cluster, in which case the tertiary could be a supermassive black hole, there's some interesting GR effect. The black hole spin can actually affect the dynamics, okay? So that's the sort of the predictions. Okay, so now let me tell you the scenario, the effect a little bit, okay? The key dynamics for this tertiary-induced merger is this Lidov-Kozai effect. I'm sure some people already are very familiar with it, but maybe there are some students. Do you know this thing, by the way? Do you know this? Okay, good. I know because this effect, some people know this very well, and some people maybe haven't heard about it. But okay, so this effect is one of the surprises in celestial mechanics. It's first discovered, already discovered, in the 1960s when people are worrying about the stability of artificial satellite. You have a lot of satellite moving on circular orbit around Earth, right? So people worry that, you know, you have a moon. You have a moon there. The moon is, even though it's small mass, they worry about that the perturbation, gravitational perturbation of the moon on the satellite, on the artificial satellite, will change the shape of the satellite, make it eccentric. In that case, you know, the satellite will crash. So that's what we bet. So you worry about this kind of thing. So that's where this Lidov paper first came about. Okay. So basically what's happening here is that, here is a sketch of what's happening. So you have this inner binary. This is the binary we care about. So it's very general. In this case, it could be the Earth, it could be Earth and this Earth and artificial satellite, and this could be the Moon, right? Or could be, in our case, it could be a binary black hole, and you have an external tertiary companion, right? And you ask yourself the question, what's the effect of the tertiary companion on the orbit of this binary, inner binary? Well, the answer is, the standard answer, if you ask a typical undergraduate physics student, he will tell you that basically what's called the basic effect is that because this guy is very far away, right? The basic effect is that the orbital angular axis will precess, so-called nodal precession. This Angular moment X will precess around this thing, the precession. So that's what you usually expect. What's surprising is that if you do the more detailed formal analysis, you discover this additional effect when the inclination angle is large. Namely, if the inclination of the two angles is greater than 40 degrees, the circular orbit is actually unstable. So in addition to this precession effect, you have this instability where the orbit changing shape, right? Initially circular, actually become now it's unstable, okay? Become eccentric. And moreover, if the angle is large, you know, say 85 degrees, then you can have this inner orbit can become very, very eccentric, right? In this example, you can see this orbit initially circular, so 1 minus e equals 1, so e equals 0, but then become very eccentric. 1 minus e equals 10 minus 2, that means e equals 0.99, so it's very eccentric orbit, right? And so that's the lead-off Kozai effect. And here is the example why that helps. So this will make otherwise non-merging binary into a merging binary. Why? So here is the example. So here is the example, right? Here we have in the binary, mass 30 plus 20 solar mass, separation 100 AUs. So cannot merge by themselves, these two little black holes. But you have a external body, far away body, 30 solar mass, 6,000 AU, so it's certainly very far away. But it's inclined 92 degrees, so it's a very inclined orbit. Then you can see, you know, this is log time. You can see over time, this eccentricity of inner binary, initially zero eccentricity, cannot merge, it becomes very high eccentricity. In fact, it undergoes this oscillation of eccentricities. Go to multiple episodes, many episodes of high eccentricity. When it's high eccentricity, the two little black holes, M1, M2, come very close to each other, radiate the gravitational wave efficiently, and can take away energy. And therefore, if you have many, many episodes of this high eccentricity phase, then eventually orbit will shrink, right? Orbit eventually decay, and then they merge. So that is basically the mechanism, lead-off Kozai oscillation plus gravitational radiation making the same merge, okay? Now, the physics, this has been well studied, right? This effect, the leading order effect, is quadrupole perturbation from the external body, right? It's basically the tidal field. Basically, you have this binary sitting here, your third body far away, the third body exerts a tidal field on the tidal potential on the body. So leading order effect is quadrupole, right? The strength of the effect depends on mass divided by a out to the cube power. But in this order, leading order, this problem is actually analytic, can be integrated analytically. So you can actually predict everything very cleanly, okay? In particular, you can predict under what condition this inner binary will become very, very eccentric, sufficiently eccentric so that it can merge, right? Right. The answer is that you know you need to be very close to 90 degrees. So here is an example. Right. So this cosine I is the inclination angle. Like cosine I has to be close to zero means I close to 90 degrees. Then the eccentricity can become very large, and therefore the merger time will be less than the Hubble time. So in this leading order, right, the merger window is small. Namely, only if the tertiary is highly inclined within you know narrow window, you can merge. Okay, this can be calculated analytically. Now, of course, some particle physicists like to expansion, to perturbation theory. Right, this in this case is just you know quadrupole perturbation. You have this high order perturbation effect, right? Octuple potential from the tertiary on the binary, and that octuple term depends on this thing, this quantity here, right? Obviously depends on this, the strength of octupole relative to the quadrupole depends on A over A out. So A is the semi-major axis of the binary, the inner binary, A out is the outer binary. So and depends on the eccentricity of outer binary. It also depends on this asymmetric mass, M1 minus M2, depends on this thing, right? So basically the strength of this octupole depends on this particular dimensions ratio. Okay, so you can basically, okay. So if you add this, if this quantity is reasonably large, let's say 0.1 or 0.2 or 0.05, right, it's not negligible. You have to include this octuple perturbation. When you include this octuple perturbation on the inner orbit, the problem is no longer analytic. you actually have to solve the equation, how the orbit changed, that's the equation. You actually solve it. The orbital evolution is actually, it's not something that can be easily written down. It's non-integrable. It's a little bit chaotic. Okay? And so you have to integrate this thing. so the several thing, but the main message here for the just the second line, skip this thing. Just the main effect of the octopole is that I told you if you have only quadrupole, the merger window is very small. Namely, you only the angle, you know, the tertiary has to be very inclined, close to 90 degrees. You can merge, can induce merger. But when you include the octopole, you could, if the octopole is sufficiently strong, you could have, you can broaden the merger window. So here, example, right? You have, if you have zero octopole, then this is, you know, very, very narrow window. This is a cosine has to be close to 90 degrees. But when you have high octopole, the window, you don't have to be 85 degrees. You could have 50 degrees, the inclination angle between the inner orbit and outer orbit. They can induce merger. Okay, so that's the main thing. Okay, main message. So therefore, you know, remember the octopole strength depends on this quantity, right? So everything being equal, right, the total mass, let's say total inner binary, total mass is fixed. So this kind of merger will be more likely, high probability, if the octopole is larger, right? Namely, everything being equal, for example, basically if the mass are more asymmetrical, M1, M2 are more different, then you can get higher octopole, and therefore you can have a larger merger window, right? Okay, so that's obvious, right? So you can quantify this thing. So here is the actual some calculation. You can see, so I'm talking about, you know, inner binary, outer binary, the total mass fixed, a given perturber, everything being the same, I just change the mass ratio between the two components of the inner binary, right? Q equals 1 means equal mass. So in that case, equal mass, you know, here I'm assuming the orientation is random, isotropic. Orientation of the perturber is random, right? So you can see if the mass ratio is 1, means equal mass, then the, you know, probability is quite small, right? You know, the window, because the window is very narrow, very small. But if you become asymmetric, then you can see this chance is much higher, okay? Merger fraction much higher. So this is simply because everything being equal, if you increase, if you make the mass more asymmetrical, the octopole is stronger, and therefore you can have a larger merger fraction. Now, does this agree? Is this compatible with the observed mass ratio distribution? LIGO already has published 85, you know, events, black hole merger events, right? So they have masses, right? You can actually do the mass ratio distribution. And you have to take into account of the systematic, you know, because when you have detection, you worry about they tend to favor equal mass. So here is what they did. This is the latest paper, looking at the mass merger rate as a function of mass ratio distribution. So here is the mean value. Here is the error bar, basically this line, so error bars, right? And 90% probability. So you can see, you know, most of the merger are roughly comparable mass. There are not so much features in the low mass end. So maybe this is already incompatible with what I just told you, right? So this means this tertiary induced merger, at least in the context of if the octopole is very strong, sufficiently strong, it's already ruled out, right? That's fine with me, I think. You know, given these days we have so many models, it's actually, I consider it a great thing to rule out something. That's right? But it's not completely yet. We don't know yet. It's possible because this, what I told you here, is that everything being equal, you have you know, just more you know, you tend to prefer unequal mass. But it's possible that, you know, nature tend to give you roughly more equal mass binary anyway, especially in the triple system. You know, most of them are comparable mass anyway. So, right. So what detected, it's two things. You know, initial mass ratio distribution and then the merger fraction, merger probability. Right. So there's some caveat in this conclusion.
So for the observed triple systems, what is the eccentricity of them for the other companion, like star? Like
observed what?
Triple star.
Observed the stellar star. Not so many. There are some stellar triples.
Yeah.
Indeed. Main sequence star triples. They tend to be eccentric, indeed. They are eccentric. Eccentricity is fine, right? Basically, I think you're referring to this formula. Yes. To have this, then you do need this is fine. There are a lot of triple systems. E out is large.
Okay.
Right? Not many. The only the data is not right, and we don't have a lot of. I'm just worried about this this mess. Okay. But this probably. I mean, this. So I think it's interesting. You know, this is an example. I think. You know, you have some prediction, and then you contradict with the data. That means this channel is not dominant. It's not a, it can happen, but maybe not a main channel. Maybe so that's fine with me. I think okay. So now let me move on to the. What happened if the tertiary is a supermassive black hole? It's possible, right? So this you have a binary, right? You have a third body which is a supermassive black hole. That's certainly possible. In this case, so I'm talking about a binary here, right? And you have a supermassive black hole. Right, and in this case, of course, if you want this thing to be not be disrupted, dynamically stable, this A out divided by A out certainly should be much larger than A. You know, otherwise this will be tidally disrupted by this gravity of this thing. Right. So in this case, of course, the octopole is negligible anyway. No octopole effect anyway. So it's actually very clean. So this guy is very small, right? So no. But in this case, even though you don't have octopole effect, you actually have some additional effect due to the spin of the supermassive black hole, right? Because look, the spin here, is black hole is very big. The orbit, it's you know this is a slow mass. This mass is much smaller than this guy. So the spin of the supermassive black hole may actually be comparable to the L out, the orbital angular momentum of the outer binary, outer orbit. So that the spin of the black hole is actually not negligible. Okay, so there are actually some GR effect that can be studied that can actually influence the dynamics of Lidov Kozai oscillation. So this, it's a, if you are a relativity person, it's if you want to do things in a rigorous way, it's actually not so easy to do this problem very rigorously because you have this hierarchy of time scales. You try to do the post-Newtonian extension of triple problem, right, the cross terms. It's become very complicated. But there's a shortcut if you were willing to be not so rigorous. You can actually derive most of all the equations by analogy. For example, right, this guy here is the orbit angular momentum. But if you think about this as just a spin, you know, as a top, then this basically becomes a two-body problem, right? It's basically, if this is a spin, right, this becomes a two-body problem where you have a spinning body here, and then you're basically orbiting another spinning body, that kind of thing, right? So you can do this kind of analogy, and that, and you do some orthogonal relation, you can actually derive all the relevant equations. And for me, it's adequate for me, but if you're a relativity person who want to do this, you can be, okay? So there are several precessions, additional GR, it's all known, this is not new, basically. You can all understand them, okay? So, so this GR effect, all this GR effect can influence the Kozai dynamics, Lidov Kozai dynamics in some way. Okay, so here is the example. So here is a standard Kozai, right? In this system, I'm talking about, 30 plus 20 solar mass moving around the supermassive black hole 10 to the 9 solar mass, orbital parameters, right? So in this problem, if you don't have this GR effect, don't have this GR effect we're going to include, it's a very clean Lidov Kozai problem, pure quadrupole, right? It's regular, you can see it's regular. You know, this eccentric oscillation is regular. You have a question? Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the outer orbit is the hyperbolic, so E out is 1.
E out. E out. It doesn't matter. This is I choose E out, then E equals 0, but it could be finite.
Sorry, I'm talking about the formula in gestural. So in that formula, if E out is 1, break down. One more slide before.
E out.
I think going back one.
Going back. Yeah.
Oh, this thing. Oh, yes.
So if E out is 1, so then.
Oh, this. It's not cannot be 1. This calculates all this formulation. It's sort of we call it orbital averaged, meaning you have a basically average over the orbit of the inner orbit and the outer orbit, right? So if you have outer orbit, it's a parabolic or hyperbolic orbit, then you have the analogous thing. You have to. You cannot do this orbital averaging. Then in that case, you have to. It's different, somewhat different problem. Okay.
So how do you move this binary to the vicinity of supermassive black hole?
No, I don't need the binary move the issue. Basically, you want to make this merge.
Right, so you want to first put a binary near that supermassive black hole to make this?
Oh, we are just assuming they're already there. Let's say that you have nuclear star cluster. Yeah, this is a good question. I'm not talking about that. Yes, I'm just talking about physics effect, basically. Imagine you have nuclear star cluster, right? Close, some of them are close to the black hole. Right, could be 1,000 RG, okay, right, and some of these stellar mass black hole could be binary. It's not surprising, I think that could be right. So I'm just illustrating this the dynamics, right? So in this example, I have right in this just example, right, and 30, 20 solar mass black hole around the supermassive black hole, and then you have this A out, 500 AU. It's pretty far away. Let's see, 500 AU, it's in RG. This is maybe several hundred RG. Yeah, it's a good question. Whether this will happen, it's not clear. Whether you have this, well, I think what you're asking, it's not clear whether the binary can exist inside this, so close to the supermassive black hole. It's possible. I think there are, in the galactic center, there are some binaries, you know, maybe not as close as this, at some distance, right? From physics point of view, you can have it as long as it's not tidally disrupted, you know, basically. If they're far, you know, given binary, if they're sufficiently far away from the supermassive black hole, they can exist. They can be there. Now, whether they really exist, it's a different question, depending on the thing. Right? Yes?
Related question. Black hole,
which is supermassive black hole, you'll have probably a lot of gas, a lot of effects, right?
Do you have a sense of like how this effect compares with the rest of the galaxy?
Yeah, I'll come back of gas here. So here, just nuclear star cluster, no equation disk, no gas. The nucleus, you know, a lot of even dead AGN, there are no gas, and in the central region, there could be nuclear star cluster. Okay. okay. So. Right, so this is a no GR effect. This is a regular Lidov Kozai oscillation, right? Zero eccentricity and then go to high eccentricity, they oscillate. Now, if you turn on this GR effect, some of the GR effect associated with spin, and you can see the oscillation character changed and can be quite erratic, okay? And again, the take-home message here is that you know, if you do the original problem without this additional GR effect associated with the supermassive black hole, you get a narrow window because of pure octopole effect. But if you add these other things, this additional GR effect can broaden the merger window. So it's actually helpful. Can be helpful making the, you know, you don't have to have a huge incarnation, right? So why is that? You can ask why this could happen, right? So the reason has to do with the resonance, incarnation resonance. The idea here is that it's the following. So here's the thing, right? because this supermassive black hole has a spin, right, it's going to make the orbit. Let's look at outer orbit, outer binary, outer orbit, right? Outer orbit, if this spin is negligible, of course, this L out will be just constant, fixed in fixed direction. But because S3 is not negligible, so that means this L out is actually not fixed. The outer binary is actually changing orientation, gradually wobbling due to GR, right? The spin orbit coupling, the post-Newtonian effect, right? So this guy is precessing around each other, so this guy is changing, so this frequency, omega L out S3, the finite value. And on the other hand, you look at this binary, this L in, of course, it's changing orientation because during the Kozai process, it's basically this L in is changing orientation, has some frequency due to a combination of Newtonian effect and some GR effect. So basically what happens is that you have this L in trying to precess around L out, right? This L out, L, L in try to process along L out, but L out is also processing. So you can imagine when there's two frequencies roughly matching each other, they match, they could have resonance. The consequence of that resonance is that even then, if L in is, you know, you have L out and L in, even initially they're very small angle. Because of the resonance, they can have a chance to become a huge angle. Resonance can amplify the angle. And then they once you have an angle between L in and L out is large, then you can bring the system into the Kozai window. Okay, so that's the essential dynamics, what's happening. It's not always happens. Yes. Depending on the parameters. Yeah, exactly. Right. You're right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So that is the sort of the GR, just additional GR effect. You don't have to be precisely at the resonance. You can just, in general, even use like factor 5 away from the ratio. You can play some role, basically. Okay, so now how much time do I have? Is that time? I should, okay, good. Okay, good. Let me just say a few words about spin. This spin, the angle between spin and the orbit is of great interest because the effect chi effective. So let me comment on this. So the question here is that, you know, you have this tertiary, the gravity from tertiary is inducing this thing to merge, undergoing this complicated orbital shape change or precession. What's happening during this, the orbit shrinks? What's happened to the S, S1, S2, obviously? That's the question, basically, right? That S, of course, it's not fixed in time. The magnitude is not, because you have the GR effect, you have a spin, you have a body nearby, this spin will precess. Spin orbit coupling is a post-Newtonian effect called the theta precession. So spin, S1, always try to precess around L, right? But the L vector, it's not constant, it's, you know, during the Kozai process, L is changing. So basically what we have here is that the spin of the individual black hole is trying to precess around L of the orbit, but L itself is also undergoing oscillation, wobbling, nutation, right? And obviously the the spin dynamic depends on the ratio, right? During the evolution, the binary, inner binary undergo decays, this ratio undergo orbital decay, the ratio will change, will cross unity. When you cross that unity, you can imagine something dramatic can happen. Okay, as a result, you can have interesting dynamics happening. So here's the same example I showed earlier, right? So this is 30 plus 20 solar mass induced merger by the 30 solar mass black hole far away, right? So you can see the semi-major axis decay, eccentricity oscillation. And the only thing new here is I plotted the angle between S and L, S of one of the black hole and L of the orbit, of the inner orbit. So initially zero, it's log time. So the eccentricity, all this oscillation, this angle also undergo erratic oscillation, variation. Eventually settle down into, you can say in this example, eventually settle down into something close to 90 degrees. Right, close to 90 degrees. And you can, this is just one example. Of course, you can do an ensemble of examples. So, okay, not going into detail. You can see there are some kind of clustering. You can see this angle close to 90 degrees. Depending on some of the parameters, right? So, if you try to do the ensemble system, you know, that's where the uncertainty come in. How do you choose the parameter, kind of things, right? And you tend to look at the bottom curve. You tend to produce a broad distribution of spin orbit angle with a slight peak around 90 degrees. So that's what I'm talking about. This slight peak, 90 degree attractor, actually can be understood, the concept of adiabatic invariance, which I'm not going to talk about. Okay, so the question is, you know, so this is a prediction, is it consistent with this, here is the current LIGO data, right? So this is most of the chi effective have big error bars. So Huang, I thought only one system that's purely negative. If you look at the error bar, okay. So I think I like the total mass thing, but if you try to divide them, I find it only one. This is only one. The other error bar is too big. So one has to be careful.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway, so is this consistent? So we don't know, right? There's one positive. So this, you know, there's a lot of the small. You know, maybe, you know, maybe because the intrinsic spin are small, or because the angle 90 degrees. So we don't know at this point. So I, right? So but this illustrates the potential to confront. We have more data. You can confront this kind of thing with observation. And finally, eccentricity. I mentioned, you know, the residual eccentricity is important, right? So when you enter the LIGO band, in this kind of scenario, the inner orbit is pumped into very high eccentricity. So when they enter the LIGO band, they usually still have some eccentricity, some of them, right? So here's a summary of this tertiary induced merger, right? They may have finite eccentricity. There are some clustering at 90 degrees. Mass ratio distribution may be already ruled out, indicating that some of these, you know, if you have this tertiary is, you know, merger is induced by in the galactic field, where the tertiary is a stellar mass black hole. Maybe this is already ruled out, okay? And then some interesting dynamics due to the spin of the supermassive black hole. Okay, the remaining five minutes, let me talk about this third flavor of merger, right? Black hole in the AGN, this is the AGN disk. So you have a supermassive black hole surrounded by gas disk. This is how AGN works, accretion onto supermassive black hole, right? And the idea here is that you can imagine, you can, you know, this, there are all, many different reasons to expect that in the AGN disk, you could have massive stars, right? Massive star, and the massive star will become black holes. Therefore, you could expect black holes, stellar mass black holes in the AGN disk. And therefore, you could imagine that could we have a binary black holes in the AGN disk, and they could undergo merger, okay? And that this kind of idea has become very interesting has been explored in the last few years. There are a lot of interesting physical processes, right? For example, you can imagine you have a stars, nuclear star cluster, they're moving around, but then they plunge into the disk, get captured, you know, by the disk, and so on. You can imagine all kinds of things can happen, okay? So this AGN may play some role. So there's different flavors, there's different merger scenarios. So let me just, roughly speaking, if you want to summarize them, it's basically there are two possibilities, so like what I call gas-free or essentially gas-free merger that's happening in the AGN disk. In this case, you basically imagine you have an AGN disk that help bring all the black holes, small black holes, into the plane, or in the quasi-plane. So once you're in the plane, you can imagine they are tend to be confined in the plane. Therefore, they can have more chance of encountering each other, right? So this is sort of, but the AGN disk also play the role of bring things into a plane, and therefore it can increase the possibility of merger, right? And then secondly, the gas itself may actually help make the binary merge. Okay, so let me discuss these two things in turn. So let me begin just talking about this simple clean problem, relatively clean problem. You can all understand. Okay, let me see. So here is a supermassive black hole. Imagine you have two little black holes, M1, M2, orbiting around supermassive black hole. Okay. No gas. Imagine the gas is gone. So what happens is that you can imagine, two little M1, M2 in a closely packed, nearly circular, nearly coplanar orbit around supermassive black hole. This closely packed configuration may be brought about by the AGN disk. You know, when you have an AGN disk, you put a little black hole there, they migrate, right? And the different black hole migrate at a different rate. So they can come closer to each other, right? And then okay, so the question then is, what's going to happen to this M1, M2? Now, it's well known in dynamics, planetary dynamics, that if A1 and A2 are close together, in fact, closer than this particular value, you can actually prove this thing, it's less than 3.5 times RH, then the orbit is dynamically unstable. This configuration where orbiting around supermassive is unstable. What's RH? RH is what we call the Hill radius. Hill radius, you know, it basically depends on the mass of the little black hole, total mass of the black hole, and the mass of the supermassive black hole depends on the semi-major axis of the orbit around the thing. And this Hill radius is basically the radius is a separation between the little black hole within which the mutual gravity between M1 and M2 is larger than the tidal gravity from the supermassive black hole. Okay, so there's Hill radius. So if the two black holes less than separation is less than Hill radius, you know, the mutual interaction is more important. Okay, so basically, so now let's imagine you have the AGN disk. For some reason, this two little black hole is brought into this closely packed configuration with A2 minus A1 less than this value. The orbits are dynamically unstable. What's going to happen? That's the question. All right, so it's very, right? You can imagine this problem has been studied in planetary context. Many simulations have been done on these things. There are three possible outcomes, right? First, you could have one little black hole getting ejected, right? Another one, you could have two planets collide with each other. The third one is one of the planets will be injected into the star, collide with the star. It's all possible, right? In the case of, right? And there's some branching ratio, right? Now, in the case of two little black holes orbiting supermassive black hole, it's the same problem, except we have a different regime. The mass ratio is very different. You're talking about 100 solar mass, M1, M2, total mass. Big black hole turns to 8 solar mass, so the ratio is big, much, much greater than 1. In that case, in this regime, you can easily convince yourself this ejection and the injection onto the supermassive, it's impossible because this thing is due to the mutual interaction. We have a supermassive black hole, it's very hard to, this mutual interaction, small mass is hard to do much, okay? So the result is that these two black holes is not possible. So what happens then is basically two little black holes just moving around the supermassive black hole, not in this regular orbit, but in some chaotic orbit in this neighborhood between A1 and A2, right? Okay, and so when they are orbiting around, because the orbit is not regular, they can basically, these two little black holes can experience recurring close encounter, namely occasionally they can come close than the Hill radius. They can come, right? They can do that forever, basically. Just coming in, but then get closer, and then of course you get ripped, become away, and they don't get bound. Except once in the great while, there are the possibility that these two little black holes come very, very close to each other, such that the relative motion between the M1, M2 is so large that you can radiate a gravitational wave. Right? So it's like Bernstein radiation. Right? When your electron proton coming, they're moving around, occasionally come close to each other, they have electromagnetic radiation called electromagnetic Bernstein radiation. So here is the same thing. Two little black holes coming very close to each other and they emit a gravitational wave. Gravitational wave Bernstein. So if this separation, if they come very, very close to each other, it's sufficiently small such that the radiation, gravitational wave power radiated in that little episode is sufficiently large, you can basically, in one shot, they become bound. Right? They think fly into each other and they suddenly radiate a lot of energy, then they become bound. Okay? And for that to happen, this separation must be very small, 10 to minus 4. In Hill radius. Remember the typical separation of these two little black holes in close encounter is Hill radius. But this thing, you really need to be very close. So this can happen, but it's a rare event, right? And you can actually ask how often this can happen. It's like, for those people who study a little bit of this problem, it's like a lost cone problem. They are moving around, but once in a while they come very close to each other, they bound, and they get lost. Basically, the binary one start, right? It's a lost cone problem that happened in the tidal disruption events. You can do some scaling. And the main thing about this thing is basically this kind of channel forming, you form this binary in one shot, by construction, it's always highly eccentric, right? When you form, it's very highly eccentric. And then the typical frequency when you form, it's actually for typical parameters, some of the parameters, 100 solar mass, some separation 100 RG. It's between LIGO and LISA, okay? Right? LIGO, LISA. So, but nevertheless, in a few orbits, they're going to merge. When they eventually enter the LIGO band, they will become highly eccentric. So this mechanism always produce highly eccentric merger, okay? And they also produce, interestingly, a broad distribution of spin orbit angle. This may look a bit interesting, a bit strange, right? Because imagine this, so two little black hole initially more or less coplanar around the big black hole, right? But not perfectly coplanar. They're always some angle, okay, small. But when they come together, they actually, because remember this merger requires very, very small separation. So at that small separation, it essentially becomes three dimensional. So it actually, as a result, the angle between the binary orbit that's merging and the original AGN, original disk, can be random, randomly distributed. Okay, in the next few minutes, let me just talk about gas effect. So adding back the gas, so this becomes messier, dirtier problem, astrophysics problem, right? So you same problem, you have two little black holes embedded in AGN disk, and they have the initial separation, let's say 2RH, right? And then they, of course, they'll catch up with each other in the, you know, they're moving, have a close encounter, and with gas. So this kind of simulation can be very challenging because you have a global simulation. You also have to resolve individual mini disk. There's a big AGN disk. There's also a little mini disk. Okay. So each one has a little thing, a little disk, and they come. The disk crash onto each other. You can see there's a lot of mess going on, and then they eventually bond. Okay, in this case, all right. they can bond. Of course, to make them bond, you need a lot of gas, sufficient amount of gas, right? This problem is expensive. It's actually somewhat probabilistic. This problem, it's not actually, it's depending on, it turns out this, whether it's form depends on the separation, A1, A2, initial A1, A2 separation, and depends on phase a little bit, okay? And so because simulation is actually quite complicated, so actually you can actually try to do a toy model problem, okay? The model problem, let me just describe, because some of you may be interested in this thing. The model problem is the following, right? You have two little black hole, A1, A2, initially separated by K times RH, right? And then, of course, we cannot do the hydrodynamical simulation for so many cases. Instead, we just say, well, suppose there's a drag force acting on each black hole. The drag force is basically given by V minus V Kepler divided by tau. Just basically, you are imagining there's a gas disk which is undergo Keplerian orbit around the supermassive black hole. You have this little black hole moving around, and then therefore there's a gas drag. Now, it's not the real simulation, because the real thing is actually, you know, the gas, as you see, gas is perturbed, you really need hydro simulation, but this is a toy model, right? But this problem, even this problem, so the question then is, what is the outcome, right? So here is the outcome, right? So here is basically, each dot represents a calculation. In this case, much simpler, just, you know, orbital motion, basically, right? For different k values, for different damping coefficient. And here it's the, just impress you a little bit, you can see the black dots means no binary formation. Blue, red means retrograde, you can form retrograde orbit. This little binary, you can become bound, retrograde. Blue is prograde, means binary that's merging, that's captured onto each other, it's actually the same direction as the original disk, original motion. You can have all these structures, okay? There's some reason behind this thing that one can understand. Just the point is, even this simple problem has a lot of structure in these things. Okay, So we actually recently the student is finishing this real hydro simulation. You can see, depending on the k, depending on the gas density, you can have all kinds of trajectory. You can have red, retrograde, prograde. This is a real thing, not toy model. Okay, and finally, just to introduce the problem, suppose you form a binary already. You have a binary moving around the big, you already have the binary formed, embedded in the AGN disk. So there's a well-defined question you ask, what's the effect of the gas on the orbit of the binary, little binary? That problem is actually non-trivial. A binary embedded in the disk, that problem is actually not trivial. You need a simulation to do this kind of things. And there are some scales thing, and the answer here is, unfortunately, this problem is actually complicated. It's unfortunately, the answer actually depends on, we now learn, depends on actually a lot of, there's no clean answer. Let me put it this way. Unfortunately, most of the astrophysics problem, because a lot of if you do particle physics, you like a clean problem. This, a lot of astrophysics is kind of dirty. We cannot, in this case, it depends on the gas, how gas cools, thermodynamics, what's the viscosity. So depending on this thing, the binary can either expand or shrink. The gas, the exact role of the gas on the binary is actually not so clear. We need more work on this kind of things. Okay? And finally, just one slide. You know, the reason we're interested in this kind of things, of course, is there's the possibility that when you have a merger in the AGN disk, because you have a plasma around, when you merge, you could have a possibility that you produce some EM electromagnetic counterpart. There's some tentative claim of detecting counterpart associated with the black hole, electromagnetic counterpart associated with the black hole merger, but nothing's certain. Okay. It's not clear. The point is that, you know, you have this AGN disk. AGN is very bright, right? You have this tiny merger. You know, it's not clear whether you can detect it. It's still uncertain, right? So here is a summary. So I talked about the different channels. I think this isolated binary evolution, it's probably happened, but there's some uncertain physics associated with the common envelope. Dense star cluster, it's very clean physics, but it's not clear whether you have enough. I think, at least for me, it's, you know, some environmental uncertainties. And then tertiary induced merger, there's some features in the thing, and AGN disk can also happen. Okay, right. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. I guess we should start with questions from. Questions from the CR
market. Thank you for the talk. So in the last part you mentioned that it's complicated to make like general statements about binaries.
Yeah.
Embedded
disk, yes.
So in the case of like it's a normal AGN that contains a binary, we know because of the simulations you did actually that for the equal mass case, the gas tends to increase the orbitals.
Yeah, okay.
So different here.
This problem is actually, I think it's different from what you are referring to. It's a circumbinary disk. You have a binary at the center. You have a disk around it. This is basically the circumbinary equation, right? Yeah, there's some similarity between this case, and this circumbinary case. But not the same thing. I don't think it's the same thing, right? I think it's different. In the other case, you know, the geometry is certainly very different. Here you have this binary embedded in the shear flow, background shear flow. So it's a bit different.
Do you form a gap here?
Sorry?
Do you form a gap inside?
You should form a gap. In the simulation I did not talk about, it's actually a local shearing box simulation with zooming onto the region in the binary region and look at outside is the shear flow, and then so we don't simulate the gap because we want to zoom in on the binary, little binary. Right? But you're right, there should be a gap. There should be a gap, and some simulation you have done this kind of thing. There's a gap. There should be a gap, yes. And it's just this problem, it's kind of based on what we have done so far and other people have done, it's not a clean answer. You can't say, oh, the gas always makes the orbit shrink. It's not the case. We don't know, right? It depends on how, you know, the temperature of the gas and the viscosity of the gas. Okay, that's life. What can we do with it? Okay, so depending on probably other things also, right? So certainly gas can affect the orbit, but it's not clear at this point. And we're only just calculating, we did it only 2D. The 3D aspect also important. So a lot of work, a lot of sort of dirty astrophysics needs to be done, I think, this kind of thing. Even such a simple looking problem, right, need some work.
So for the gas-free formation you're talking about, you're saying you're expecting repeated encounters or something like that.
The formation.
Yeah, the formation.
The formation part, yeah.
But can you just have a one scattering and then between these two objects and then they just fall, go apart, then somehow because they exchange energy and then they just get different semi-major axes and then they do not encounter.
Okay, so this is what we, this is the example, you can see it's multiple. Where is it? This is, this is a separation between the two little black holes, right? Initially far away, coming close, and go away again, and they come back again. After a while, they become bound. They always stay inside here already. You can see they're bound. But there are other parameters, so we have, so they did a suite of simulation now. Just hard to read this thing. You can see this depends on the initial K, depending on this is essentially a proxy for the density of the gas, right? So each thing represents one expensive simulation. I could not do this. This is a Los Alamos computer. Our friends at Hui Li at Los Alamos did this thing, right? We did this thing with the Jialu. You can see, look. Here, this is a relative trajectory. They come into this dark region is a Hill radius. The two black holes coming close together and then fly apart. No formation, black. That's why it's black. In this example, the two black holes, this is a relative orbit, right? Coming close within the heliosphere and stayed. Okay, they become bound, good. Yeah, and so this red means it's retrograde. And there's another, and you can see sometimes you have more, for this case, you can see probably one shot, more or less bound. But in this example, you can see here, you can see, coming in and then far away again, like multiple. So depending on the parameters.
Right.
Depending on the
so ones that do not form.
Do not form, yeah. They just pass by each other.
And
okay, when they don't form, they settle down into a stable configuration where there are two possibilities. One is that they become separated far away, sufficiently far away, the orbit become regular. Another outcome is that they become a co-orbital. You can actually find, I don't have a plot. You get a situation where the two little black holes both on the same semi-major axis, but separate by some angle. It's a co-orbital. They are central black hole, both at the same orbit, but they are, of course, different phase. So they can settle down there. So these are the outcome for this non-form. They stay there, basically. Of course, when the gas is gone, they may become unstable again. Then you can do something, right? So OK. OK. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry, I actually had a question. I raised my hand, I'm sorry.
Oh. Hello.
Hey, do you have time for one more question? Hey, do you have time for another question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. Thanks for the great talk, this is awesome. And I just had a question on the last slide, and it was about the is it like these cocoon formations? You have black hole jets carving out in the inner core.
Last slides? This one?
Yeah, it was kind of like, I'm not.
Okay, yes?
And I was kind of wondering if you imagine like the virial limit where we have like a bunch of these cocoons carving out in an AGN's like central disk. I was wondering if you could imagine something like a merger causing some type of chain of cocooning where you could see this kind of collapse in the AGN disk because these cocoons might be getting too close to have like their separation being non-dynamical. And I was wondering if that gives any insight into the large limit where you can see like a cheese lily central disk doesn't collapse in a lot of ways. Sorry, that's my question.
Okay, I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but so this particular cartoon from this paper, Tagawa, it's not a simulation, not a calculation. They just basically imagine you merge the black hole in the AGN disk. The merged remnants, obviously had a lot of spin. They can, have jets. And then the jet, in this cartoon, just going up and down. But you could imagine a situation where the jet is actually inclined. They can collide. The jet could be different direction. They could collide with, it can clean. In this case, but you can collide with the gas, the AGN gas. They can produce something. there's different scenario possibilities that people they are speculating, discussing. So I guess I didn't get your question. You don't have a chain of events.
My question was just if like this density of gas in the central disk could affect other black hole mergers. And so if you might wonder if it's saturated, so you have as many cocoons as possible. So you just have like cocoons and then spaced by a stability feature.
So many.
And then if you have like one, like maybe you have one binary that comes in on a long orbit, could it destabilize all of the cocoons at once?
I don't know. It's possible. I haven't thought about it. Yeah, it's possible. You're saying like you have a merger, but you disturb the gas, and then that disturbance induce another merger. I suppose that some kind, that's possible in principle, but I really have not thought about it. Yeah, thank you. This is interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, yeah.
Possibility, like a chain of events. Suppose there's many such black holes hanging around, right? And then one merged, and then you induce other merger. Yeah, I guess it's possible.
The cartoon picture might be 90-degree rotations for each of them, so you could see that the black hole jet of one is feeding into the accretion disk of the other in the small cocoon. And then that's obviously like super cartoonish, but then you could almost see that you get a quasi-linear feature tracking the entire interaction through the whole disk. But
it's possible. Cool. Yeah. I think it's possible. It's possible. Yes. Thank you.
It's like really complicated.
Interesting idea. Interesting thought. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, thank you for the extra question. Thank you.
Yeah.